This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Michael Heck, president and CEO of GNO Inc., and we're going to see whether or not he's getting the message from Coleman.
Apparently, Coleman is pretty focused on the lights. It could be the interstate lights. It could be the Crescent City Connection ones that we were supposed to announce, but we had a small issue. It could be the...
You just nailed it. Bingo. Bingo.
It's
He had a special date that night to watch those lights go on, and you let him down. Hadn't forgiven you.
I don't know. That's crazy because they've been working, like, perfectly. They were beautiful. We took our mother-in-law on the Natchez last night to kind of do the touristy thing. I'll tell you, man, first of all, it's a fun thing to do. But it was beautiful. But now with the bridge lit up, it was just stunning going down the river, you know, down to Chalmette and St. Bernard, and having that glowing purple in the background. It's pretty neat. And then after that, Newell, we're going to do the high-rise, and we're going to do the Huey P. So we're going to become, you know, it's going to be all of the lights, just like Coleman said.
Absolutely. And I love them. I really do. I think they're a nice little touch, right? Separating yourself from others.
Yeah, well, you know, and you just think about all the ways that you show the city, a city typically in B-roll or in postcards or in films. You know, you need those iconic moments in the skyline to kind of anchor it. And, you know, we always show the dome, which is, you know, a spectacular piece of architecture. But now that bridge gives us something to kind of come and zoom into. So I think it's going to – we said it was going to be an instant icon, and I think that that seems to be the case. So, you know, a lot of credit to DOTD for getting that thing up. And, you know, next we'll do the next bridge.
Absolutely. Goodell was in town, Roger Goodell, NFL commissioner, this past Friday. We were actually broadcasting live from there, and he visited New Orleans, took a tour of the facility, and got to see the renovations for the first time. Folks had thought he had seen some of it before, but it turns out he didn't. It was the first time, and he seems to really have liked what he had to see.
Oh, I didn't realize it was his first time seeing it. Then I think he would, you know, when he said that, you know, I think his quote was something like, look around, it's absolutely miraculous what you've done with the dome. I agree. And I got to tell you, Newell, having been to a lot of the other stadiums, I would take our $500 million that we've put into getting this 50-year-old stadium up to its current specs over the $2 billion for one of these generic new ones any day. It feels fresh. It's open now they've replaced those ramps, and the fact that you can walk to it, I think we're spoiled. If you want to understand what other stadiums are like, go and try to watch a 49ers game, which is actually in San Jose, not even in San Francisco. We're really blessed to have this stadium downtown, and lucky to have the money that LACD and the state and the Saints have put into it.
And you can't park near a lot of these stadiums either. I mean, 49ers Stadium is in the middle of a neighborhood. I mean, it's like...
Yeah, it's... I was talking to the gentleman who was CEO of Visa, who was in charge of running the deal when they had it in New York City at the Meadowlands. And he was describing to me what it was like trying to get people to take mass transit to go out to that. And he said it was just a disaster because, you know, nobody wants to go to a game in the middle of the swamp in New Jersey anyway. And it was cold. And so, we're very lucky to have the stadium. And I think another thing that we have to remember about how we got here today is that Roger Goodell, although our relationship with him has been fraught, he was really one of the key people, along with Tagliabue, who absolutely 100% had our back after Katrina. And there was never a question of the Saints not coming back to New Orleans because they weren't going to let it happen. And, you know, so everything that's happened since then, I understand, but we do have something to be thankful for to the NFL and to Goodell for maintaining the legacy here. And then, of course, Mrs. Benson, who the fact that she understands the Saints not just as a business, but to me, I almost perceive it as a spiritual endeavor, a spiritual calling for her, is incredibly important. Because when you read about what's happened in Oakland, where over the past 5 years they've lost every single one of their professional sports teams, and you kind of consider how devastating that's going to be to Oakland, you know, the importance of the Saints and the Pelicans to New Orleans, I would argue, is 10x more important. And the fact that she is, by all accounts, 101% committed to their future here is, it's worth thanking Mrs. Benson and the Saints for.
Well, yes, and there's no doubt about that. But also, you know, I don't underestimate the value of what this community has done as well. Oakland deserved to lose the Raiders. They deserved to lose the A's. They repeatedly are failing on just about every front there is when it comes to quality of life issues. They are so disconnected with reality that they don't know which way is up. And not unlike every other business, you can't survive in that context, right?
No, it was an arrogance that allowed them to do this. And, yeah, they don't get to have nice things anymore. And I think it's a great point, Noel, because when you think about the challenges that we've had in our community, for example, with crime over the past few years, which is a huge issue for the Saints and the Pelicans, because they're trying to get people in seats and suites, and that requires residents and companies who can afford the suites. We came together as a community with things like the NOLA Coalition to make a difference, and as a result, we're now, although it's not perfect and we've had some challenges recently, overall, we have the fourth fastest decline in violent crime in the country. The community came together to do that. The community is coming together to do the Super Bowl. We were planting trees this past weekend out on Crowder Boulevard in New Orleans East. That's a community who understands that it's a collective effort, and that being arrogant, aloof, or, you know, saying you're going to win the battle but lose the war is not the way to go. That's not a thing here. So, no, you're right. It's a symbiotic relationship. I was interviewed the other day by somebody from CNN that's doing a piece on the Saints, and he said, you know, describe the Saints to me. And I said, they're kind of a secular religion. I mean, when you think about the definition of a religion is not rational. It's based on faith. It's based on identity. And I think the way that we feel about this team, you know, which we sometimes describe in religious terms like faith or believe, is because it is a secular religion that binds us all together.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot like our Mardi Gras celebration and other celebrations that we have here, except these are, what, 11 celebrations a year when the Saints are playing here, and the remainder of when they're not playing here that we come together in our homes in so many different ways. And obviously, it is something that we enjoy doing together across all races, ethnicities, age groups. It doesn't matter. And then you look at the number of people in the stands that are dressed up. You would swear it was Halloween.
Yeah, no, it is true. We just downsized, and you know, one of the rooms we had to address was the costume closet, and I don't. That's not a thing. That's not a designation on a house plan in most other places in the universe, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Kids' room,
no doubt.
Study, costume closet.
So, Mike, let's move to a little quick update. French Quarter, what's going on? 74 days out, it's counting. You know, I mean, I don't know about you, but the month of November flew by.
Well, it always does.
Here we are,
and, you know. And 74 days is actually being generous, because that's till kickoff, and the Super Bowl starts the week before, so it's really 60-something, 66, 67. And then when you consider the timeline for getting projects done, we really are kind of in the crunch of the last week or two. If we don't get things started now, they're not going to be done by the end of January. It's just the timeline, critical path, you know, order of operation reality. So now we're going to be really focusing on the French Quarter. On December 2nd, the notice to proceed to do the right-of-way, the roads in the French Quarter is going to start. There's going to be charters. It's going to be Iberville. It's going to be a number of the other cross streets like St. Anne and St. Peter all getting done. There's specialty sidewalk work that's going on in the French Quarter right now. We're beginning to install new lights, so all the lights are going to be replaced and are going to be uniform. We're also going to be stringing cafe-style lights in some of the alleys to change them from alleys to more attractive venues. There's this project we're doing with the DDD called the French Doors Project, where we are putting in new lighting, new facades, and murals in the 100 blocks. So those 100 blocks are going to be beautiful instead of terrifying. But probably, you know, and I'm proud of all these things. There's the homeless work that continues, there's quality of life streets. But the one that I'm probably most excited about is we've had street signs printed for the French Quarter, and now we're moving to contract to get those put up. So for the first time, I can't remember ever there being street signs in most of the quarter. There's actually going to – I hope it doesn't take some of the fun out of it, but we're going to have you know, we're going to have street signs, so you're going to, right?
I'm just thinking of all the drunken games that you play without having the street signs up in the court.
Yeah, I mean, are people going to be upset at us? Like you're ruining the French Quarter. You're destroying the culture.
Exactly. No, I'm sure
you're going to make it like Disney.
I'm sure there will be some. Yeah, a street sign everywhere.
Would that qualify as gentrification?
I don't know, a street sign.
Absolutely.
Ambit?
If you want it to be, it definitely is. I'm sure that we're going to get attacked, you know, in Gambit or something about it. So, as my father-in-law used to say, Newell, what you can do, what you can do.
Yes. Michael, just finished the third extraordinary session, 2024. We come out with a new tax package. I know we're going to talk more about this with Susan Bonnet-Bourgeois in the back half of the hour, but your thoughts?
You know, I think that we ultimately got to something that is going to be, let me put it this way. At the beginning, we were talking about is the right way to attack tax reform to try to shoot the moon and do the entire thing in one fell swoop, or is it to try to be incremental and continue to make good progress and put out positive messaging? And my answer was, you know, everybody since Buddy Romer who's tried to shoot the moon has failed because it's just politically close to being undoable because of all the entrenched interests over, frankly, 100 years. But, we applauded the governor and Richard Nelson for their ambition and having the reach exceed the grasp. What we ended up with on the backside is something that looks more like an incremental positive step. Probably the most significant one in all of this, or maybe two, but the most significant one is the personal income tax rate coming down from a top rate of 4.25% to a flat 3% personal. My sense is that that will help us when we're trying to sell the state to individuals and to companies. Getting rid of the franchise tax is also a really nice thing because the franchise tax was basically a tax for the privilege of doing business in Louisiana, which seems like a strange thing. We'll see what happens with the inventory tax. I think that's still to be told how that plays out. Parishes now have the option of opting out in exchange for getting a one-time payment, but each parish is going to have a very different approach to that depending on how important that inventory tax has been to their revenue mix. But I think the overall message is that Louisiana is serious about creating a simpler and more attractive tax code. That's a message we can tell now to the world. We're definitely going to go up in the rankings from the Tax Foundation. So the sausage that ultimately was made, thanks to the governor, thanks to the leadership of Cameron Henry as well, and many others, Richard Nelson, I think it's a decent breakfast sausage that we can eat and go about our day.
So, Mike, I'm going to ask Susan this same question, but I'll ask you now. How do we market that we are now the highest sales tax state in the country?
Yeah, that's the awkwardness in this, and it does seem counterintuitive that that you would raise taxes to lower taxes. Now, when you dig into that, the reality is that there still are exemptions for at the state level anyway for basic needs like food and medicine. I think the reality, Newell, is that you just don't market it. I think it just becomes part of the background noise, and you focus on income tax. And what I can tell you is that when we're marketing the state, what folks focus on is the personal and corporate income tax. And by the way, sorry, the corporate income tax has been brought down to a flat 5.5 from a top rate of 7.5. And so from a marketing, given what we have to spin, it's easier to spin a flat 3% personal, flat 5.5 corporate with a very high sales tax rate with exemptions than what we had before. The point of this whole thing is that if you really want to be like Texas, you have to double our property tax. And that's never been on, right, on up for discussion. The homestead exemption, the most sacred of the sacred cows, right, has never been up for debate. And until we really get into that, if we don't balance the budget using property taxes, which in my mind are better taxes because they're local control taxes, what are the options? You've got hotel motel tax and sales tax, and that's how it plays out.
I think there's the removal of a whole lot of things. It's just kind of curious. I understand that this thing is completely complex, and I applaud the governor for attempting to do this, and I get that, we improve our grade on the tax foundation, but I think it's going to highlight something that may come back to haunt us with voters. We go up in the standings only because we did a tax swap and we spread the burden amongst consumers.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's a healthy analytical approach, to this. And I think consumers are going to catch on. Oh, well, okay. The better it is for corporate America means that the worse it is for us as consumers. And that's how we're going to get to the motherland. And what's going to be interesting to see, and I keep hearing this, but the incremental change that was caused, I'm trying to be as optimistic as I can be. I don't see, and maybe Susan has some data otherwise, but I don't see how that's going to translate into a lot of businesses picking Louisiana over other states that still have more favorable corporate tax rates.
The key thing here, Newell, is that only zero is zero, and there is something mm-hmm. binary about being able to say I've got zero, and we just couldn't figure out a way. Without getting into property taxes and shifting the burdens to locals, to local parishes, I don't know how you get there. So no, it is. I think this is a case of not letting the great, get in the way of the good, and we can definitely debate, and it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
I think there's a lot of things, lost carryover, accelerated depreciation. There are other things that businesses have the benefit of that individual consumers don't, that if there was more parity in the way that we looked at that, that you make up those differences. But those things weren't even on the table, I think consumers at some point in time are really going to start to band together and understand, how this equation works.
That's the question. You don't want it to become a consumer versus big business or a class type of dichotomy.
No, you don't.
Because
that's my concern.
That's not helpful. Yeah, I hear you.
So it's going to be interesting. We'll talk more about that. And I hope that you engage in the conversation with Susan when she
if
comes
she
on
if
well.
She lets me, she kind of, I don't know, ever since she got the highfalutin job, she kind of
she's
tells
put you
me
in
to
your
stand
corner.
Down a lot. Mm-hmm. She's like, hey, yeah, and she shushes me. She might even shush me on air, which is just humiliating. No, Susan's the best, so I'll stick stick around. But yeah, you know.
All right, we'll be right back with Michael Heck and Susan Bonnet-Bourgeois. Folks, stay with us.